If you've been listening to the news this morning, you would have heard the Health Minister, Kim Hames, announce that he's going to publicly apologise to mothers who are unlawfully separated from their babies after giving birth out of wedlock. He's going to read an apology in State Parliament. Mr. Hames says he wants to see a memorial created for the families affected by what was considered cruel welfare practices from the 40s all the way through to the 1980s. And I asked you to tell us if we are telling your story, or maybe you even worked for the department at the time. For those of you who don't know, it's the story of girls, really. But in this country, they were seen as outcasts. They were unmarried mothers, and be it society or the state or the church, often their parents, they were really blamed for what was perceived as a mistake. And they made it very clear to those unmarried mothers that forgiveness would only come really if you gave up your baby for adoption. They have very sad stories, and you're going to hear some of them now. Jean worked for the department who carried out some of these adoptions. Jean, hello to you.
Good morning, Jeff. Yes, I worked there in the late 50s. This is only from what I believe, but the girls came into the department because they were expecting babies and they didn't have support of their families or parents. And at that time, there was no government financial assistance.
Yes.
These girls were well cared for. They were put into domestic work, living with a family, and they were cared for that family all the time during their pregnancy. And then when they had their babies, they signed willingly. There was no coercion for their baby to be adopted. But admittedly, they probably didn't have any option to do any different.
No, Jane. And look, I'm not querying your view of it because you were there. But over the years, I've met quite a lot of these women in different states who have told stories of coercion in the sense that they were told that there was no option. Now, don't make a fuss. This is it. Can I ask what your role was, Jean?
I was a welfare officer.
Okay.
But what? I'm not saying that that mayn't have happened. I've no idea, but it didn't happen from my experience.
Can you tell me, when you say that these girls didn't have the support of their families, it wasn't because they didn't have mothers and fathers generally, was it? Was it not a case that those mothers and fathers just were not prepared to accept an idea of a child born out of wedlock?
Yes, that would partly be the reason, and partly financial. You must remember that years ago people weren't as financially well off as they are now. And I have no doubt that the girls experience, I often think of one particular girl now, and I do feel that they naturally miss their babies terribly, you know.
Jean, you don't have to give a name, and please don't, but can you tell us about your memories of that girl and why one girl stands out to you?
I'd rather not.
Okay.
I'd rather
no,
not.
That's, it's,
she's
that's
not
your business.
Related to me.
No, but that's your business.
But I'd rather not, because it would point out the baby.
Okay. Look, I'll leave you with one final question, because, you know, to a generation listening to this kind of story today, it is a stark policy. In many cases, it's been considered a cruel policy. But do you think that adoptive practices of 50 years ago were just reflective of what society felt 50 years ago?
Yes, I do. I feel it's how the families felt. But I just feel that, well, things have changed. Now, see, I was interested in another girl that did take her baby, accept her baby, and I visited her for a couple of years. And in the end, she said to me, "Oh, I should have had my baby adopted." And I said, "No, don't. You've managed up to date. Now, look, we'll work something out." And she did. She kept her child, and it all went successfully. But it depends on the person, their age, and it depended on so many things.
Look, I'm glad that you're able to bring us a picture of what it looked like, Jean. Thank you very much.
But they were caring in the department. I don't want you to think that in the child welfare department in Perth, they were caring.
Jean, thank you for your call. This is Marilyn. And Marilyn, and I appreciate your courage in coming forward to talk about these things. Marilyn, what's your story?
Yes, well, I was a natural mother. I gave my child up unwillingly, June of 1970. I was bullied. I was made to feel like a criminal, that I had no rights whatsoever. And in the end, I had nowhere to go. And I'm afraid the lady previous speaking, she's obviously an older woman. I really can't swallow all of that. I'm sorry. Look, there are women that haven't made it out of all this, like myself. They've died. And, you know, I'm speaking for them today too.
Marilyn, and I know how hard this story is for you, because I've spoken to plenty of people like you.
Yes.
The pressure brought to bear on you, where did it come from? Was it your parents? Was it their status in the community? Was it the people they knew when they went to church on Sunday? Who was it?
No, well, yes, it was that. But look, basically, too, we don't want to face up to it. It was the doctors, the medical profession. They had a part in it. It was the lawyers. They had a part in it. It was numbers for the church. Okay, numbers for the church. You can't get away from it. You know, and for these poor infertile couples, there was not one thought for us for years and years and years. For years, I looked in prams for years, thinking I was going to find my baby.
Have you ever...
You know what that's like?
No.
No, it's hell on earth. We have been treated like criminals. A murderer. Don't get what we got. And yet we're supposed to be all calm and collected. Still in 2010 about this. This to me, I've been waiting 40 years for this day. 40 years.
What will an apology mean?
Well, it will just be the acknowledgement of the absolute truth of what went on.
Yes.
We were raped of our children, my daughter. And the consequences in her life. Fortunately, I emerged. I had a supportive husband. I had a sister-in-law that had been through the same experience. So I've emerged, and I found my daughter 22 years ago, and it changed her life for the better.
Well, Marilyn, I'm very, very glad for you, but I also appreciate your call. And I know Jean is coming to it from you know, her belief of what that time was like, but I have heard too many stories like yours, and they are young girls being told, don't make a fuss, dear. This is the best thing.
That's right. Yes. No thought that we had any feeling whatsoever. We were a commodity, and our children were a commodity. And many of these children are still paying that price in their so-called homes now.
Marilyn.
That's all we were.
Yeah. Marilyn, thank you for calling us today.
Thank you for listening, Jeff.
And you keep listening, Marilyn, because there are other women with a story not unlike your own. Hello, Sue.
Hello. What I was ringing up for is to say, that woman that first spoke to you, tell her to go and get stuffed, because she's telling absolute bloody lies, because I did actually give away two children for adoption. And, it's really painful. And at the moment, I can't talk very easily because it's too emotional. That woman that just spoke to you just then, I know where she comes from, but I haven't actually found my children. So,
can I ask you a couple of questions, or is that enough for you?
So
one thing that people have always said that is incredibly important, and as I say, talking to these women who they give birth to their child, and it seems like, you know, some of them weren't even able to have any moments with the children before they were taken away. Was that your situation?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
That was my situation. I actually, as I said, gave birth to two children, one in Sydney and one in Perth.
How many years ago, Sue?
37 years ago.
And the ache.
35 years ago.
And the ache doesn't change, obviously.
No, and I haven't seen my parents since the birth of those children, or since the birth of my son. I haven't seen my parents. And my father died, and I never saw him till he died, till he was in his coffin. after he told me when I first gave birth to my son, I was not allowed to bring this baby home and I was not allowed to talk to any other member of my family. And, yeah, I was the oldest daughter.
So I'm going to let you go and I appreciate your calling.
Thank you.
The other thing is mothers searching for their children. And the difficulties obviously associated with all those kind of things. This is a slightly different story. This is one of those children. Hello, Kathleen.
Good morning, Jeff.
Thanks for talking to us today. What's your story?
Well, yes, I am one of those children who was taken from her mother at birth. I'm 47 years old now. And my knowledge of my mother is that she was 15 when she became pregnant with me. She was rejected by her parents and sent to a Salvation Army girls' home, where I was subsequently born. She never saw me at birth. She's told me in a letter that a sheet was held over her face,
yes,
so that she couldn't
see you at
me
all.
At
yes.
all. And then I was kept in the children's section of that home for 2 weeks before I was adopted by my adoptive family. I didn't have a terrible time in my adoptive family as many people did. I was adopted by a middle class family in Sydney. I wasn't abused. I was treated well.
Yes.
But it never goes away.
Kathleen, when were you made aware that you were adopted?
I was about five, I think.
Yeah. And when did you start? When did you find out information about your birth mother?
I started looking for my birth mother when I was about 30, with the support of a therapist that I was seeing at the time.
Yeah.
It took me probably 2 years, but I did locate my birth mother through birth, death and marriages records in Sydney and through the Salvation Army and various other places. I eventually found out her married name and tracked her down to a coastal town in New South Wales.
Did you have a phone conversation with her?
No, I didn't. I wrote to her. I wrote a letter to her explaining who I was and why I was making contact and a little bit about my life, and that I would very much appreciate having some contact with her. And after about a month, I received a letter back from her saying that she'd spoken with her husband and considered all aspects of my request and considered that there would be no benefit in having any further relationship.
When was this, Kathleen? How many years ago now?
Oh, look, I can't remember exactly, but I was around 30, so about 17 years ago.
And at 47 years of age, still no contact with your mother. Is she still alive?
She's still alive. I have seen her, though.
You've seen her?
Yes, I went and looked at her. I felt that I got to a point in my life where I thought, well, she may not want to have any contact with me, but I want to at least know what... And I respected that. I didn't like it, but I respected it. And I thought, but there's nothing to stop me from seeing what she looks like. So I went with my partner and we sat in a car down the road from her house and watched her leave and go to work one morning.
Did it give you any comfort to see the person that you might resemble?
It gave me a great shock to see how much I looked like her.
Mm.
But I don't know, it was some small measure of satisfaction, I think, to having been able to do that.
Did you feel tempted to open the car door?
No.
No?
No.
Where are you at now with this? Does it, as you get older, does it matter more? Does it matter less? Does it matter that the Health Minister wants to apologise to people like your mum and people like yourself for the events of other times?
It's not so present in my mind anymore as it was during that sort of time of my life. Occasionally I think of it. I don't think that the offer of a sorry has much impact on me at all, really. But I can't stress enough. I mean, my situation isn't the same as everybody's,
no.
But it's something that stays with you. It leaves, for me, it leaves a question in my mind all of my life.
Yes.
Which is what was wrong with me? It just stays there.
And I'm afraid, Kathleen, that's probably something that your mother's had to deal with as well.
Yep.
Because of the manner in which she was punished. I know we can talk about it at the time and say that's just what happened, but I think you can also look back at it with the benefit of history and say that's just a bloody cruel thing to have done to someone.
Yeah, and I think the further cruelty of it for me was in my mid-30s, I went through a period where I developed a number of breast lumps, and my doctor needed to really make some decisions about whether I was going to have treatment or not in case I was going to develop breast cancer. And she needed to base some of those decisions on whether I had a family history of breast cancer. And my mother refused to provide that information.
Oh, Kathleen, I'm so sorry. I guess the rest of us are relieved to hear that you sound okay, but I
am okay. And, you know, I'm a mental health professional and I work with families and sometimes with children and adopted children. And I just, you know, I've been able to have a nice life for myself. But at the very core part of your being, it never goes away.
You're very courageous to talk to us and thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening.
You know, there are so many, I find this fascinating and the guts that people show in being able to talk about it is incredible. But there are so many different kinds of stories. You're about to hear another one. This is Luke. Good morning to you.
How you going?
Yeah, Luke, I'm very moved by what I've been hearing people say. Tell us your story.
I've been adopted back in 75. My parents weren't able to have kids at all. Mum was very sick, and they were very open about it. My older brother was also adopted in 71.
Yes.
They told him, probably when I was about three, well, when he was about three or four, and so I've always known, but he found out very young, obviously.
Yes. So you're adopted, your parents, when you say your parents couldn't have children, as in they just weren't able to look after you, is that it?
No, as in the parents who brought me up.
Yes, do you
my
know...
My mother was very sick. She wasn't able to have any children. She had various operations.
I beg your pardon. Do you know anything about your birth mother, Luke?
Yeah. No, I met all of them probably about 14 years ago now, 96.
Yes.
And, you know, it was we were connected together through Jigsaw, which is over here in WA.
Yes.
Back in 95, I think, they changed the laws. You had to put a veto out if you didn't want to be contacted.
Yes.
So I didn't worry about it. And the birth mother waited 6 months to see if that would happen and then wrote a letter in to say she'd like to at least find out how I'm going and things like that. And I responded to the Jigsaw side of things and we decided that we'd meet up in a nice neutral place up in King's Park.
Ah, right. So was it a case of, is that you sitting next to me on the park bench?
Well, we did funny things like, you know, park cars beside each other, even though we arrived at different times and things like that. And it was a bit weird seeing, you know, natural features, which obviously are genetic rather than environmental.
Are you in touch still, Luke?
Yeah.
That's great. I think people will need to hear stories like yours. Thanks very much.
No worries.
This is Denise, and it might be a similar tale. Hi, Denise.
Hi there, Jeff.
What can you tell us?
That I'm thankful every day of my life for being adopted.
Why, Denise?
Because my parents are my parents. My parents are the two people that raised me, that spent the last 49 years being my parents. Because they're wonderful people, because they've done what you've done as a parent, taken responsibility for me.
Do you know about your birth mother?
A little. I'm not interested.
Do you, and look, I'm not going to go too far down this path with you if you don't want to either, but do you reflect on your birth mother in a negative way?
No, I don't reflect on her.
She's just not part of what you think about.
She's not part of my life and never has been.
Yeah. Did she give you up at a young age?
Apparently. She was having an affair with a married Jewish guy in Perth.
Okay.
And I've been raised by Jewish parents.
Yeah.
They're the most tremendous people on the planet. I'm blessed.
Yeah.
I'm thankful. And I think there's a bit too much woe is me going on.
Well, Denise, see, everyone's situation is very different.
Absolutely.
And that's why I'm really glad to hear from you and Luke. But situations are very different. There are, as you heard with a couple of those early callers, this thing of putting a sheet over the girl's head so she would not see the baby, and that was it, and 5 days later was expected to go back to mum and dad and live some kind of, you know, under some kind of premise that everything was okay. When we talk about the good old days, our wardrobes and closets were just full of stories, and they were kept under lock and key, and I'm not sure that was a great thing. Alison was a midwife. Hello, Alison.
How are you?
Well, you know more about this stuff, so tell us.
Well, I'm ashamed of what we did, but that's the way we were taught. I trained at Crown Street in Sydney,
yeah.
And I would have been a young 20-year-old. And I suppose we judged them, which is cruel. And now as a Christian and a grandmother, it was an appalling thing. And we did cover their face. We barely spoke to them. We took the baby away the minute it was delivered. We never told the mother what sex. We never told the mother how it was. And I'd lost a couple of children and never had counselling in those days. And I was years trying to cope with trauma.
Oh, God, Alison.
One of the 7 months, I had a 7 month prem that shriveled up and it was thrown in the rubbish bin where we had nowhere else to. So I suppose that's where they were put. And I wanted to apologise to those women. I mean, it was appalling, but it was what we did. We were taught that.
Alison.
I suppose we judged them because they had children out of wedlock, and it was a disgrace now, I think.
Okay. Look, a couple of things. The things that you've told me are as it happened and what you thought at the time, but it must have been very hard for you in these ensuing years to every time you thought about it. I mean, do you have an abiding memory of that time? And is it exactly what you said about the sheet going up over the girl's head, the baby being taken, and I don't know, the shouts and yells of those young women echoing in your ears sometimes?
I don't know that I thought of it because I had the trauma of losing a couple of kids soon after that, and I was too... I was withdrawn into myself and depressed. But I think with the maturity now, I would have been cuddling them. I am very sorry that we did it, but that's how we did it.
You were also told...
I was only a young kid.
Alison, you would also have been told that this was how it was to be done and you would have... And that's why you did it, I would imagine. Or do you feel more personal responsibility?
Well, I am to blame for what I did, but I now, with hindsight, I'd have stood up and refused to do it. But I was only a kid being trained as a midwife in Sydney.
How long did you do this for, Alison? How long were you working and are we talking about? Are we talking 1950s or early 60s?
Yes. No, I trained in 1958 in Sydney.
Yeah.
I trained in Melbourne from 54 to 57.
You would have heard perhaps Jean was our first caller who worked for...
No, I have only just got okay. on. I've had an appointment.
No, that's okay. We had a woman named Jean who worked for a department here saying that we did everything, we thought it was right. And then we had a whole series of people ring up and say, well, that's not true. It was a cruel practice. Is it a cruel practice as you reflect on it now, Alison?
Yes, well, I've done 50 years mid.
Yeah.
And I have now, because of my circumstances with babies, I have been able to go and cuddle them when their babies have died. But as a young... It's very hard to say what you do when you were young and training. You do as you... The example you are told to do.
Yeah.
But with hindsight, you wouldn't even dream of it.
Alison, can I thank you for just talking about it? It's a desperately sad situation and you were very much involved in it, but I thank you for coming on and talking to us.
But to think we threw miscarriages in the rubbish bin, we had no what that was. I had to repent of that. I'm a Christian and I had to repent. A few of us midwives did that, but we never saw the mothers to do it to their faces, and I am sorry that we allowed people to make us do those things.
I think
now, in hindsight, I would have said, go to pot.
I think people will be very glad that you've come on the radio, and I thank you for doing so.
Thank you very much, Deb.
We knew that this would be quite an intense half hour. We'll finish up with Steve, but again, thank you for your contributions. Hi, Steve.
How are you, Jeff?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Look, it's one of those things. I was a partner of somebody in 1970, that upper middle class Jewish family in Perth, and it wasn't just in the realms of Christianity. It was that whole thing of what would people think. My girlfriend, who later became my wife, was whisked off by her family, dumped in Adelaide in a convent, had the baby ripped away from her, as you hear all the stories, came back, was rushed back, went back to school to finish her leaving a matric with 32 stitches in her, with her breasts bound, and a whole lot of stories and excuses, and nobody was to know. And we kept that a secret for years, mate. Then we went on and married, and unfortunately the first child that we had died. And there's two issues. I hear the people, adopted people. We've made contact with the girl that we had. And there's two issues. The adoptions, you know, like I'm not saying that we were equipped to bring up a child, and the child that we had a beautiful, wonderful life that maybe we couldn't have provided. But it was the way that it was done. It was just so cruel. It was just horribly cruel. That's the only way you could describe it, to do to a 16 or 17 year old girl. You know, it was just just a travesty, and saying sorry is really nice, but you know, it doesn't do a lot, really, you know, and there's not a lot that you can do at the end of the day. Saying sorry, you know, it might sound like it's going to do something, but it doesn't. I think the only thing that we can do is learn from it and learn to not do things because of what other people think that may be really, really horrible for the people that are involved. And I think that's the best thing that we can do, is all have an education program and have chats like this so that we maybe don't do the same sort of things to coming generations.
No, Stephen, thank you very much for that. And I think it does give weight. It, you know, when we're, you know, a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about generational issues, I hope with some good humour. But let's not pretend that another time was a better time because we feel all nostalgic for certain things. There are some really dreadful wrongs in that situation. But where, you know, where do the truths lie, and who should be held accountable? Is it a mother? Is it a matron? Is it a government department? Or is it just good that Kim Hames, for the second time in a short time, I think, wants to do something about it and apologise? As RJ says, Alison and earlier callers, so brave in whichever situation and whichever role.